Okay.
We're recording now?
Yes, I'm recording now. This is Jessica Gallagher. She's competing at the IPC NORAM Cup this coming week.
I'm not competing in Copper.
You're not?
No.
No? You're just here?
Well, we're training. I've got a race at Winter Park, but Mel and I aren't racing in Copper.
The IPC is putting you on the team list. That's why.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we only had our first downstairs yesterday, so...
Okay.
It's a little fresh.
Continuing where... I guess we started... So, your guide is Eric Pinkerton, and he did win a medal in women's downhill blind skiing.
Yes, he did.
Despite the fact that he's neither a woman nor blind.
No, and he loves telling people that he was the first Australian female Paralympic woman to win a medal. It's one of his favourite things.
IPC's website doesn't list guides on their medal thing. Are they doing that because they don't want... They realize this isn't about you, per se.
Yeah,
are they doing that because they are trying to keep off the able-bodied people to make the Paralympics seem more pure for people with disabilities?
Look, I don't know, but I think that's... I don't think... I completely disagree if they don't have the guides up there because it's pretty plain and simple. I wouldn't be skiing if it wasn't with him. Being legally blind, you do have limitations, and that's just reality. We're certainly able to overcome most of them. And when it comes to skiing on a mountain, the reason I'm able to overcome having 8% vision is that I have a guide. Yeah. So I think it's pretty poor if the IPC don't have the information up there because he does as much work as I do. He's an athlete as much as I am. If he crashes, we're both out. He gets drug tested. He is as important as I am on a race course. So I would strongly hope that they would put it up there. And
this is Eric.
Okay. How are you doing?
I'm Bruce Mallett.
Good to meet you. Nice to meet you.
We've been having a great debate about you on Wikipedia about whether or not you won a medal in women's blind skiing.
Yes, I won it. I've got it.
Yeah. I found a picture of you on the ABC website where two of you are there both holding medals up.
The IPC's website doesn't credit you. That's
the IPC.
One of my favorite...
I'm surprised by that.
It's unusual,
We've seen some issues. The IPC database is kind of crap.
Yeah.
But one of the things I think Ross mentioned earlier that he thought the most delightful about you guys is you were racing and you're like, oh yeah, midway down the course we lost communication. Oh, how does someone blind deal
funny
with
funny for you now was bloody scary.
What race was that?
It was the giant slalom in Vancouver at the Paralympics. So actually we were talking about this before because it's one of the unique aspects of wearing headsets and being able to communicate all the time around the mountain. Earlier today, Eric had a stack, and all he could hear as he was tumbling down was me laughing.
Yes, I wasn't feeling the love.
But what was the question, though?
couldn't imagine anything scarier than charging down the mountain at high speed and losing that communication link. You know,
the difficulty was in the giant slalom. It was raining, and I, being so new to ski racing at the time, I'd never experienced skiing in the rain, and so as soon as I came out of the start hut I lost all my sight, which is something that I'd never experienced before, and only having 8% you treasure it, and to lose all of it was a huge shock. And then when I couldn't hear Eric talking, I'd realised that our headsets had malfunctioned because it actually got rain into them, which normally wouldn't happen at the mountains because it usually snows. So it was the scariest moment of my life going down that course, and going down it was about getting to the bottom in one piece, not racing to win a medal, which was pretty difficult, I guess, or frustrating, given it was the Paralympics Games.
I asked this to the standing guys upstairs. Who is the craziest amongst all you skiers? The ones who can't see, the ones in the mono skis, or the one-legged or no-armed guys? Who's the craziest one on the slopes?
I think they're completely blind. Yeah. If I was completely blind, I wouldn't ski. I don't know, some of the sit skis are pretty crazy as well.
You have full control over your skis and all, though. You've got both legs and both arms to do that with.
But you've got absolutely no idea what it is.
Where you're going.
And so you have to have complete reliance on a person and trust that they're able to give you the right directions and that you are actually going in the right direction. And it's difficult with the sight that I have, but I couldn't imagine doing it with no sight at all.
Are the two of you trained together all the time?
Pretty well, yeah.
Yeah, so everything on snow basically is together. It's one of the difficult things, I guess, is we have to have that 100% communication and trust between one another. And a lot of the female skiers on the circuit, their guide is their husband. And so that's kind of the trust relationship. And Eric does say at times that he feels like we're married.
Yeah.
But
you're checking for my wallet.
But so it's always constantly about trying to continue to build that relationship so that essentially you put your life in his hands and whatever he says you do kind of thing.
As a two-sport, winter sport, summer sport person, how do you find that balance between one sport and the other sport?
It's not easy. Yeah, it's not easy at all. Yesterday was my first day on snow since March 16, 2010. And that was mainly because of the build-up, obviously, for London and the times when I was going to ski, I was injured. So to not have skied for that long is obviously a huge disadvantage when all the girls have been racing on the circuit since. And it's vice versa with track and field. So I've got an amazing team at the Victorian Institute of Sport. I call them my little A-team of strength and conditioning coach, physio, osteopath, soft tissue therapist, sports psychologist, dietitian, and basically everyone has expertise in their area, and we come together and have meetings and plan 4 years ahead and say, well, you know, at the moment Sochi is the goal, but Rio's still in the back of the head, and knowing that, knowing my body so well now that I've done both sports for 5 years means that I know where we've made mistakes, yep, and I know where things have gone really well, so we can plan ahead for that and prepare so that the things that did go wrong won't happen again, to make sure I get to each competition in peak time.
Okay.
What things went wrong?
Mainly injuries. So that's the most difficult thing with doing two sports. Track and field is an explosive power. Long jump and javelin, over 4 to 6 seconds of maximal effort. Ski racing, you're on a course for a minute to a minute and a half, so it's a speed endurance event. And the two couldn't be further apart in terms of your capabilities and the capacities that you need as an athlete. So one of the big things, I guess, after the Vancouver campaign, from being in ski boots for so long, I'd lost a lot of muscle through my calves, and so they weren't actually firing properly. And when you're trying to do a long jump and you don't have half of your leg working properly, it makes it pretty difficult to jump a good distance. So there's those kinds of things. So I'm skiing now, but when I'm in the gym doing recovery and rehab or prehab stuff, you know, I've got calf raises and I've got hamstring exercises because I know they're the weaker areas that if I'm not working on at the moment, which are two muscle groups that don't get worked during skiing, that I need to do the extra stuff on the side so that when I transition back to track and field, I don't have any soft tissue injuries like strains because of the fact that they're weaker. So
do you prefer one or the other? Do you say, I would really rather be out on the slopes rather than slogging and running the same or jumping the same, you know, sand pit time after time?
I get asked that a lot. I think, you know, I love them for different reasons and I hate them for different reasons. So I think at the end of the day, I would prefer ski racing, mainly because of the lifestyle. I think ski racing is a lot harder than track and field to medal in, but I love the fact that I get to come to amazing resorts and get to travel the world. But I think at the end of the day, I get the best of both worlds. By the time my body's had enough of cold weather and of travelling, I get to go home and be in the summer and be on a track in such a stable environment, which is something that vision impaired people love because it's familiar and you know what to expect, whereas in this environment it's not. Every race course we do is completely different. And
I heard you were an avid snowboarder. How disappointed were you when they said no to your classifications?
Very disappointed. As soon as, for Sochi you mean?
Yeah.
We weren't really expecting it. Mainly because they've brought in snowboard cross, and I couldn't imagine 4 blind athletes and 4 guides going down the same course together at the same time. It's sort of a disaster waiting to happen. But I guess having been a snowboarder first, as soon as we found out snowboarding had been put in, I rang Steve, the head coach, and said, I messaged Eric and said, can you snowboard? And when I rang Steve, he goes, don't worry, I've already found it, Eric can snowboard. So it would have been amazing to be able to compete in both, but maybe next game.
So you also snowboard? Okay.
Yeah.
So she does a lot of sports, and you also do a crazy number of sports?
Oh, yeah.
You do summer sports as well as winter sports?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, look, I'm through the sporting career. I played rugby union, rugby league, soccer, early days. I played for Australian Colts overseas, rugby union. Spent most of my life sailing, competitively and socially, snow skiing. Learning to snow, but kiteboard and trying to surf again.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a lot of sports.
Mm. Yes.
Does Jessica need guides for all of those? Are you taking?
I don't do one of those. This is me, Eric's partner.
Oh, okay.
Come and sit
We're down. The Wikipedia people.
No, so I played sport all my life. Like, I started with cricket, I played competition squash, I raced for Australia in Salem, played rugby union.
Most of us, have played sport all our life, but there's a difference between playing sport and playing sport at a high level. And as you, the higher level you go, the more specialised you tend to become. And here I'm looking at two exceptions to that.
I suppose I can round that out by saying to you that I don't think I would ever reach in an able-bodied game. I would never reach the pinnacle because I'm not prepared to spend 10 years dedicated to that one thing. And to get that last 10% or 5% of performance at that level, that's what you've got to do.
Mm.
So I play everything to a reasonable level, but to get to that really, really highest peak level, you have to give up everything else.
When you go to the pub, do your mates make fun of you for having a medal in women's blind skiing?
No, not really.
I think they all love it. They're this is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think we started at the Olympics with, we went out into the crowd to meet Jess's mum, and we had our medals. So there was two of us, and we were waiting for her mum to come back. And I think in that 2-hour period, there was at least 150 people from all over the world who wore our medals and took photographs. And then, my medal's been all over Australia and with my mother and family and that type of stuff.
Where is the medal at the moment?
Where is it?
Yeah.
Good question.
It'll be on your cherish, isn't it?
We had a problem where they had Laura, I think, put a picture of the medal up that somebody had taken up on the Gold Coast where it was on display. Somewhere.
Okay, yeah.
And then
it wasn't good enough. The IPC says you didn't win a medal.
But the picture was taken down because we can take a photo of...
it's a Wikipedia copyright issue.
Yeah, copyright issue.
Yeah.
So if it's permanently on display, we can upload it, but if it's not, we can't, see. Yeah. So,
okay. Going to a completely different issue.
Sure.
You guys are... It's blind, so blind sports got three classifications that are medical. Unlike almost everyone else who's got... ability-based. Functional ability.
Yeah.
You guys are the only medical ones. Do you think the blind classifications are fair in terms of how they operate, or should there be changes in how that works in terms of the IPC stuff?
Yeah. I think the system they've got in place is good in terms of having the three classes. So you've got completely blind, who are B1s, less than 5%, which are B2, and less than 10%, which is B3. I think those systems work really well. I guess one of the difficult things with vision impairment is that there are so many diseases and conditions that everyone's sight is completely different, and they have that problem with the other classes as well. But in terms of the class system itself, I think having the three works really well. What do you think?
I think the classification system itself's fine.
Yeah.
It's the one or two grey areas with people. Where are they there or are they there?
Because that affected you in Beijing?
Right? Yeah. So I guess that was obviously really disappointing or ironic as well, in that one of my eyes was 0.01%, two-sighted, so... one was eligible, the other was just minimally outside the criteria, which left me not able to compete. But because my condition is degenerative, they knew that my sight would get worse, and so I guess I was in a fortunate position where, once my sight deteriorated, I was going to become eligible. But there are some of the classes where if you don't have a degenerative condition, that's not possible. So I guess that was... no one ever wants to lose any of their sight, but... I guess that was one positive to losing.
On some national competitions, they have a B4 class. Do you think those should be eligible in terms of the international competitions?
Which sports have B4s? I don't
know. I know some of them got B4s.
Vision impairment.
There's a level down. It's not used internationally. It's used only for domestic competitions. I think it's used...
Social racing.
Yeah, that's a difficult one. I think for social reasons, that's a great thing. But I think if it's, yeah, I don't know if I would, yeah, it's a hard one, isn't it? I think socially, to get more Paralympic athletes involved in the sport, if they've got a degenerative condition and then that border, then they should be allowed to compete. But obviously then not, I don't think they should be eligible to win medals at a national competition or anything like that. So I was, after Beijing, I was able to forerun races because I transitioned over to skiing, even though at that stage I wasn't eligible. So that was great for us because the IPC knew that my eyesight was going to get worse. So I was able to forerun races, which was a really good experience for us, so that when we did get to that level. So I think because of the lack of numbers in Paralympic sport, I think the more that you encourage athletes and give them those opportunities, it's a great thing. But I guess it's about the athletes realising that, you know, you're in it for the participation and to grow as an athlete rather than to win medals. I don't think the system should be changed. I think three classes is enough. And where the B3 line is compared to a B4 is legally blind.
Yep.
So, and I think that covers everything. I think that's the stage where you have low enough vision to be considered a Paralympic sport as opposed to, I guess, an able-bodied athlete. And that's in all forms of life, you know, with government pensions, with bus passes, all that sort of stuff. The cut-off line is at legally blind, so I think that's a good place to kind of keep it.
Veering away from this, I remember watching the Melbourne Cup stuff on television, and there you were. I think you were wearing some hat or something.
Yeah, my friend's a milliner. It was real flower, real orchids.
So, like, are you basically a professional athlete who has enough like money or not like sponsorship to do that sort of stuff? And
I wasn't getting paid for that.
You didn't get. I remember seeing it on television. I was like, "That's Jessica Gallagher. She was in London. That's so cool."
Yeah, I know. There are two organisations, well, there's a few that I'm an ambassador for, and one of them is Vision Australia, who were the charity for the Melbourne Cup Carnival.
Yep.
So as part of my ambassador role, I was at the races helping them raise money, and that involved media stuff, so that was the reason I was there on the screens. but no, I didn't get paid. But my friend was lucky enough to make me the flat, but... Mm.
So, but what else, if you're not getting paid to be like a sponsor for All That Is Awesome in Australia, what do you do outside of skiing and the long jump and the javelin?
I'm an osteopath.
Okay.
So I finished my master's degree in 2009, so completed a bachelor's and a master's. I was working for the Victorian Institute of Sport diving program, but with the commitment to London and now having so much travel, I've actually just put everything on hold in terms of my osteo career, as there's not really any time. And then, yeah, the ambassador roles, I do a lot of that, have a few commitments with that, and then I do motivational speaking and that as well. So
that's very cool. Eric, I've read that you work as a guide in backcountry skiing and all sorts of crazy stuff like that. What do you do when you're not leading Jessica Gallagher down a ski course?
I'm the chief executive of Disabled Winter Sports Australia.
So
we run that, look after all of the disability winter sports, except for the Paralympics.
Yeah, so all social, recreational.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's very, you like that? You find it fulfilling? Or?
The skiing aspect's good. I don't know about the corporate stuff. I could give that a miss. But I think it is quite fulfilling. It's there's a very, very good group of people who enjoy themselves, you know, both in disabilities and able-bodied. They're working as guides or support staff.
Has it changed over the last few years?
For us?
Yeah.
Just like being a guide in general, and I guess, some of that?
Sorry?
Like being a guide in general, how things have changed or improved, or the IPC giving you more recognition or stuff like that?
No, I don't think, how do you explain that one? I don't see myself as the athlete, as an athlete.
Yeah.
Legally, we are the athlete. Like, if I fail, she fails. I've got to ski the exact same course, but there's some idiosyncrasies associated with it. Like because I'm a male guiding, I have to ski on male skis, which are different to female skis, so which means my turn shape I have to control differently, so that's the same as her turn shape. So it's a little bit silly, where if I was a female guiding, I'd be on exactly the same skis and we'd be able to ski exactly the same all the way through. In that context, I think the fact that Jess won the medal opened the eyes to the parent, to the APC, about vision impairment as a definite, you know, sort of medal contending aspects. The biggest impediment to the whole process is how the hell do you get a guide who's A, capable, B, available, and C, able to pay them, fund themselves. You know, so we're fortunate that the APC pushed forward now for the recognition of myself as an athlete, and because we have the medal from the previous Olympics, we're now tier one, so we get the government government funding coming through. You know, but without that, like the 2 years before the last games, that cost me like 15, 16 months of my time and $40,000 of cash to be the guide.
Mm.
You know, so while I enjoyed it and what I did, it's very, very hard to say that you could a guide could make a career out of being a guide.
Yeah.
Type of thing. So yeah, there needs to be a little bit more consideration of that. A bit like the IPC saying, no, you're not a medal winner.
Yeah,
you know, it's quite a silly situation where it's written into the rules that you are both the athlete, that yet at the same time you're not a medal winner.
Yep.
Or something like that. So I think there's evolution, it's growing, it's occurring, it's changing. Yeah. Very, very difficult to get for it.
Okay.
Think
about any more questions. Are you guys happy with the media coverage on the winter side? Do you think that there's a bias? Like, obviously there is a bias towards the summer athletes, but do you think the winter people get a fair shake?
I think it's fair. It's reasonable, and it's certainly a lot more than what it used to be.
Yep.
But you know, winter sports in general, just from an Australian perspective, is something that's not well covered. But I'd say that the coverage from the last Paralympics, the Paralympic Olympics, was great.
Mm.
You know, as far as an evolution of the coverage goes, that's for sure.
There's nothing like winning a medal, though, to lift the profile of the sport.
And I think that certainly helped after Vancouver. Not just Paralympics, but able-bodied with Lydia and Tora winning, and then to have Eric and I win a medal, and you know, to finally have an Aussie female that has a Winter Paralympic medal. And I guess there can be some misconceptions with, I mean, the winter team is so small, so in comparison to the summer team, they're always going to have a lot more coverage just purely based on numbers. You know, there are 160 athletes that went to London, and there's not going to be many of us in Sochi, so... Yeah, there's not even 10 really, so...
There's five athletes.
It's five
guys
at the moment, yeah. So I think with... A lot of the time, I think with Paralympic sport, at the moment it's coming... The APC are doing great things to get a lot of coverage for the team and that, but I think also individually it's growing. Like, I've certainly noticed a lot more over the past few years, but Eric and I are in a very unique situation, well, for me as well, being a summer and a winter Paralympian, that there's... more interest, I guess. But yeah, I think with London, it sort of opened Australia and the world's eyes to Paralympic sports, so the coverage from that hopefully will continue through to Sochi and it'll get a lot more people covered. But I know, you know, prior to Beijing and Vancouver, compared to my build-up to London in terms of media, was worlds apart in terms of the amount of things that I did and the profile pieces that were created. And so that was great to see that people are actually starting to understand and see what it's like.
I guess my last question for you is, you mentioned there's some inaccuracies in your Wikipedia article.
what
are they that you know of?
I'm not completely blind in one eye.
Okay.
That was probably the biggest one. So I'm legally blind and I have 8% in both eyes.
Okay.
I think a couple of the events, it's quite confusing, my career. One of the hard things is that with each Summer Games, events come in and events come out, which makes it very difficult as an athlete. So in Beijing, I was supposed to be competing in long jump, shot put, discus and 100. After Beijing, they dropped shot put and discus, but added javelin, which is why in London I competed in long jump and javelin, not shot put and discus, because it wasn't available to me. So I think maybe a couple of those events were wrong.
Okay.
But yeah.
I apologise.
No, that's all right.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's fine. Like, I'm sure a lot of the stuff was taken from newspaper articles.
Yeah, it was. It's correct. It should be verifiable. So it's the other media organisation's
exactly.
problems.
Yeah.
Okay.
I haven't snowboarded and I don't play netball and basketball anymore, but that's kind of my stuff. I think in there it says one of my medals was, I think it said, I won a silver for the long jump and a bronze in the javelin at World Champs. I think it says I won 2 bronze.
Oh,
that's... And I think the distances were wrong too. Sorry.
No,
yeah. But the sources you took them from, because I remember looking at it at the time and going, which source did that come from? And I think a lot of it was from the Athletics Australia website, which is completely wrong.
Okay. Yeah. Good to know. That's the problem.
But I do like the photo you've used.
I don't know where we got it.
It was the, it's just the Paralympic profile.
Okay. Oh, yeah, because the ABC gave us pictures of everyone. Yeah.
We're trying to get them to give us pictures of the winter athletes as well. Yeah. So.
But we think we'll get them before Sochi.
Yeah. Just email me.
Can we get a photo of you? Because I'd like to have one for your attitude.
Anyways,
you're before on the front page. And I had a big fight to get it on the front page.
Yeah. Okay. Is there anything we should have asked you that is ignorant media people we didn't ask you?
No.
Good. Fantastic. Oh, sorry. You can answer that.
No, I don't think so. That's just...
Good. Okay. Now we can end this.
It's just interesting to know what's interesting to you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah. It's not.